asked me my testimony, but not necessarily my testimony about becoming a Christian and having my coming to God moment. Beth kind of put it in my head to talk about my story of Sava Lee. And so I'm going to tell that story today. And I'm starting with my own story, my name, Sarah. And it is a Hebrew name, comes from the story that we're going to talk about today. Apparently it means princess, but originally her name was Sarai, and actually that description is a little closer to what I would consider myself. So, but there's a reason that I don't use the name Sarah very often. And so this place is one of the only where I am called Sarah. Here and in my family. Everywhere else, everyone calls me Lawson. I am Lawson to my professors, I am Lawson to my friends, I am Lawson to my coworkers, my boss, everyone calls me Lawson. And here's the reason. So, in the next graph here, you will see the amazing number of Sarahs spiking at the time that I was born. And so having worked with like at least three or four just in my own teaching group, there was no way we could call each other Sarah. But when I met Tristan, obviously I wasn't a Lawson. I was a Sarah Childs. So when we were dating, I was Sarah and he was Tristan, but for some reason I actually had a coworker who called him my Abraham. And my story does somewhat parallel the story of Sarah in the Bible. So in Genesis 17, God also said to Abraham, "As for Sarai, your wife, you are no longer to call her Sarai. Her name will be Sarah. I will bless her and will surely give you a son by her. I will bless her so that she will be the mother of nations. Kings of peoples will come from her." Abraham fell face down. He laughed and said to himself, "Will a son be born to a man 100 years old? Will Sarah bear a child at the age of 90? And that's the piece of the story that I chose to focus on. So this is my family, four generations in one picture. You can see me down there, and I'm somewhere around two, which means my mom would be 22, my grandma would be 42, my great-grandma would be 62.
Wow.
Because we were all firstborn girls 20 years apart, and that was quite the pattern. However, I was married at that same age and had no kids, and I was thinking, holy crap, my mom had two children at this age while I'm barely getting married. And so I decided here to kind of diverge from that past and talk about a little more of my Sava Lee story, and in order to understand that, you have to understand my story. So, are you a medical zebra? Yes, I am. And that's a big piece of my story. So, I have a couple of doctors here in Oregon, not when I was a child, but here I started to become their zebra, which is the medical slang for just all kinds of weird, unexplainable things. So, a brief medical history. When I was a little girl, things were kind of normal. I had bladder infections, but that was explained by having soap in my baths, and that irritated things. And I had just this list of things, some medically explainable oddities and some not explainable at all. When I was in sixth grade, I went through a scoliosis screening that they did for everybody at my school and found that I had scoliosis. And the reason for that was that I had uneven leg lengths, which I didn't know at the time. Same thing with twisting my ankle a lot. Uneven leg lengths had something to do with that. So there it is. Quite a few times there. And then I had a knee surgery in 7th or 8th grade in order to correct that. So they scraped out growth cells, thinking that the other leg would catch up and it would all work out in the end. And I continued to have twists and sprained ankles. They were really weak. In gymnastics especially, it started to come out a lot. And so in 10th grade, we went in and had some x-rays done, and they found benign tumors in my right foot called enchondromas. And so they decided to do a surgery and to curettage, which means scoop out and then resection it. So in 10th grade, I went in for that surgery, and it's kind of cool because the doctor came in and showed me the bone that he was going to put in me from the bone bank, and I thought that was awesome. And so it continues, however. So then my junior year, I got anemia with no real medical explanation. We ended up going to the children's oncology ward to try and figure out if there was something, some reason for that, with no real medical explanation. My senior year, I ruptured my spleen on a sledding trip with my church youth group. And sledding is very dangerous, I have to say, and I warn all parents about your kids sledding, because I have almost died twice sledding. In college, I had severe bladder infections to the point of having like blood in my urine, and they couldn't really explain why that happened. I had some emergency room visits from vomiting and screaming and pain from periods. I actually had a year or two without any incidents, and it was kind of strange, just like a little lull. And then I started noticing, I had a job and I was walking 3 blocks to the school I worked at and back, and I was standing at concerts, and I just noticed that my leg kind of ached. And one night I just looked at my leg and I saw this lump there that really scared me, because I couldn't imagine how something that big, it was kind of a big lump, but how something that big could just like appear. And obviously it didn't, I just wasn't paying attention. So maybe those 2 years of not paying attention and thinking everything was fine was time for this to grow and finally catch my attention. However, I did nothing about it because I had no health insurance, and I just lost my job at the end of the year because they were cutting back so many teachers. And I ended up getting my job back, and I worked through the year, and I just didn't think I had any time to go to the doctor, so I left it for another year. And finally went into my doctor, and then a sports doctor, and then OHSU. They just kind of kept passing me up to people more knowledgeable or experienced or whatever. They just kind of were hands off about it. And finally, the doctor at OHSU gave me a name for some of the unexplained things, like the benign tumors. When you have multiple enchondromas, they call it Olier's syndrome, and apparently it's rare. So all the medical students at OHSU were filing in to see this, you know, new medical thing that they got to see and probably wouldn't see again. And so they were going to do a biopsy and a resectioning, and so I went in for that surgery, only not, because they stopped the surgery in the middle of everything, saying, okay, this biopsy didn't just turn out like nice and here's what it is and we don't have to worry about it. This actually is more serious, we think, and we're not really sure what stage you're in or what. And anyways, it ends up that I actually had chondrosarcoma, which is a cancer that the cartilage tumors in your bones start to break out and act malignantly. So they therefore decide that they are cancer and not just a benign tumor. And when I gave my testimony about my cancer story, which is a whole nother story, this was our kind of signature piece because Appetite and Fight Club was like a really popular movie, and If I Had a Tumor, I'd Name It Marla was like just standout line from that movie, and we used it in our presentation then, and we called my tumor Marla. It was a really nice way of like kind of distancing ourselves from the actual medical terms and you know, thinking beyond that of what it could be and what could happen. So yeah, it was scary, and I actually ended up having chondrosarcoma in multiple locations on my leg. They at first thought it was just in my tibia, and I think they actually knew that it was also in my ankle bones, the talus specifically. And so they recommended that I amputate my leg below the knee right away. And they didn't give us other options. And we knew that there had to be something else that could happen. And so we ended up getting too much into this, but we ended up going to Washington, D.C. for two different surgeries. A doctor there knew what he was doing, had experience with this, and had what he termed limb-sparing surgery on the internet. And so we followed that lead wholeheartedly, and knowing that God put that in front of us for a reason. And so I had two surgeries, one that was a resectioning and a pinning of my tibia, and one that they, when we were there for that surgery, they discovered the other one in my hip. And so I went back for the second surgery where they rotted my leg, took out what shouldn't be there, and put a big metal rod through it. So I don't go off at the airport metal detectors. Everybody wants to know that. I don't. But then I went through physical therapy for the atrophy in my leg. After 6 months of not walking on it, I thought I would be able to by the end of everything. When the doctor said I couldn't. So I had to do a lot of physical therapy for that, and then that was really painful, and I still had pain when I was walking, and so I had to go in for another surgery where they clipped the pin that was in there because it was just doing things that it shouldn't. And so then I had more physical therapy for the scarring that had built up from not moving my foot correctly. And I mean, this is only part of my list, because then I could go on and talk about my goiters and like weird stuff that my doctors are like, only you would get this, Sarah. Only you would get a goiter. Nobody gets this anymore. So I am a medical zebra, yes. And for my cancer, there's not really any term for remission. That's another thing people want to know. Oh, well, are you in remission? And there's really no such thing. So from one of the books that I read, she decided to come up with her own term because there's no such thing for her cancer either, and so she calls hers progression-free remission, and I'm taking that one as my own too, because if it's not progressing, it's not doing anything, and that's what I want. So that was a lot of medical issues to deal with in my life, and spanning from like junior high just through getting married and being 25 is when I had my cancer. And I mean, my thinking, just my family, I mean, everybody had kids by 20. So at 25, I was like, oh my gosh, I'm supposed to have kids by now. And I really want to have kids. And Tristan didn't, because he's 2 years younger and was not ready. And so, you know, and then we had to get through cancer. So there's dealing with that. And grandparents started asking, and I started thinking about it. I went to a seminar about genetic cancers because I wanted to make sure that if I had a child, I wouldn't be passing horrible cancers along. And that kind of eased my mind. I was like, I'm ready to have kids. So about 2 years later, I feel like I'm getting old. I'm like 27, 28, you know, 30's right around the corner. And that, in my mind, was like my self-assigned cutoff. Like, I couldn't have kids after 30. the risks go up, and you know, I'd be an old mom, and so I was really just ready to go. So I read a book called Taking Charge of Your Fertility, and I started charting and taking temperatures and looking at times and dates and all this stuff, and nothing's happening. And there's a lot of trying to figure things out. I knew that I was already a medical anomaly, so I started going to doctors. They were poking and prodding, and finally I was like, I don't want this to be invaded anymore by medical anything. So I just decided to deem myself infertile. And I just wasn't gonna worry about it. I wasn't gonna have kids, and I didn't know if there was a problem. I wasn't willing to go in and find out what was wrong, besides one procedure that was quite invasive, and I was done. And so I told my parents, I just called all of them and said, like, we're not having kids, don't ask us anymore. And I had to take some time to mourn, because it was a big loss for me to think that I wasn't going to have kids. And I passed 30. I was officially too old in my mind. And I was trying to read some books to kind of get over that, because it was a very big mourning process. Like, I remember just like laying in bed with Tristan, crying, both of us, and just saying, this is it, and we're not trying, and that's it. And I read a book called Hannah's Hope. I started it, I read about 4 chapters, and it was not for me. It was hopeful. Imagine a title that actually goes along with what's inside. I should have known as a reading teacher. And I was not hopeful, and I really just, I wanted a book to tell me how to get over it and move on and live my life without kids. Like, how do you do that? That's what I wanted to know. And my mom said, well, maybe you're supposed to write the book on it. So I started thinking about that, and I talked to people without kids, and like Debbie, and tried to just get hope from that and find out, like, how do I just live my life being a couple? And so we did. We just kept living life and having fun, and you know, we both got into music projects, and we went to concerts, and we just lived the couple life, partying and having a good time, not worrying about kids, and having plenty of money, because 2 incomes and nothing to spend it on. So we had fun. And the story does continue. And in Genesis 17, God also said to Abraham, as for Sarai, your wife, you are no longer to call her Sarai. I've already read this, but Abraham fell face down. He laughed and said to himself, this is the piece, will a son be born to a man 100 years old? Will Sarah bear a child at the age of 90? So I was not 90, but I felt that way. And I felt like it was beyond God's plan for my life. And so we, as part of just kind of trying to pour our energy into something, we were asked to become godparents. And it was one of the biggest blessings to us. That's our our family. And we adored Jackson and Jacob, and still do, obviously, but to think of them as our kids, because we couldn't have any, it was a blessing, definitely. So, in the story of Sarah and Abraham, Abraham has some visitors, which are the Lord, somehow, three visitors, the Lord, angels, somehow he knows they are sent from God, and they say, "Where's your wife Sarah?" "There in the tent," he said. Then one of them said, "I will surely return to you about this time next year, and Sarah, your wife, will have a son." Now Sarah was listening at the entrance to the tent, which was behind him. Abraham and Sarah were already very old, and Sarah was past the age of childbearing. And so Sarah laughed to herself, and she thought, "After I'm worn out and my Lord is old, will I now have this pleasure?" Then the Lord said to Abraham, "Why did Sarah laugh and say, 'Will I really have a child now that I'm old?' Is anything too hard for the Lord?" And that's a key verse for me in this whole passage. "I will return to you at the appointed time next year, and Sarah will have a son." Sarah was afraid, so she lied and said, "I did not laugh." But he said, "Yes, you did laugh." And the idea of becoming pregnant just became something very far removed from me. I never had any medical diagnosis, but I was convinced that I was just barren, infertile, and unable to have kids. And so because of that and my mindset and what I feel is just not really believing that anything was too difficult for the Lord, I remember the exact time, exact moment that I became pregnant. And it's hard to explain. I couldn't even explain it to Tristan when telling him this over and over. I was sitting in Sunday morning service at church retreat, so you can read into that. And I felt something, this zing or surge or realization that, and I knew at that moment something inside me said, like, "I'm pregnant." And I literally laughed it off just like Sarah did. I laughed it off so much that I did not believe I was pregnant when I started to have symptoms of being pregnant. I really did not believe that God could overcome whatever was going on. And it was November, December, and I just kind of started feeling nauseous, and I thought, "Oh my gosh, I got the flu," you know, and I'm waking up a couple mornings that way, and I told Tristan, "I think I have the flu, I didn't get my flu shot," and Tristan's kind of thinking, "Are you sure? Seems like it's been a while since your cycle." And I wasn't keeping track. I had no idea. And after a couple of days of that, maybe he's right. And I took a pregnancy test one morning, and I didn't believe it. I did not believe it when it said that I was pregnant. It was an old one. I thought, you know what? It's expired. It's faulty. So I'm not pregnant. And I went through a very stressful day that day, just work stuff. I had a parent that was in my room, and I had somebody else come to my room for my protection. And I was like, ah, I'm already stressed out thinking about this. You know, maybe I'm pregnant, maybe I'm not. And I had to get from work to the coffee house to play a show with Debbie that night. And like, it was a really hard day. And when we got home, took another test, what do you know? It said the same thing, didn't change. And so it goes. One of my favorite quotes from I think Kurt Vonnegut writes that in many of his books over and over. So it goes. I broke down and I really freaked out, and I didn't have anybody that I wanted to call and tell this to. And finally, I was like, I have to call my mother. And because for me, I was imagining so many medical issues, so many problems that could come up. And let me tell you, if you're in that place yourself, never ever read What to Expect When You're Expecting, because it is a book chock full of every possible thing that could go wrong in your pregnancy. And I was, it's a great book for toddler years, but not. Finally gets past all those, this could happen. And I had so little faith that nothing was too hard for God. If there's anything that's common to the story, that's what it is. And I called my mom, really horrible way of telling your mother that you're pregnant. Mom, I was pregnant and I was freaking out. And was Sarah? I mean, I am. I still am. But I'm freaking out. And that, I'm sure, maybe made her heart skip a little beat. And it was terrifying for me. And I had the most terrifying, normal pregnancy of the history of man. I'm just going to claim that. And I did not enjoy it because I was freaked out the whole time. I didn't want pictures taken, really, because I didn't want to end up later looking at pictures of me pregnant with no child. I was really paranoid and really, I had very little faith. And a couple things kind of helped to break that down. My stepdad receives messages from the Lord, and he received a message for me that I was going to have an uneventful pregnancy and that it was going to be a girl. And both of those things were true. My dad has prophetic dreams, and sometimes just weird visions, but sometimes prophetic dreams. And he had dreams of this little girl that was going to be in our life. And my mom had a lot of excitement, and she was constantly praying for me and had her women's groups praying for me. And so I had a lot of breakdown of trust in my body. I didn't trust my body. I didn't trust God working in my body, even though I really should have, because all of these medical, horrible, atrocity type things all worked out just fine, because I'm standing here and I'm healthy and I'm, you know, I should have trusted. So in Genesis 21, now the Lord was gracious to Sarah, and as he had said, and the Lord did for Sarah what he had promised. Sarah became pregnant and bore a son to Abraham in his old age, at the very time God had promised him. Abraham gave the name Isaac to the son Sarah bore him. When his son Isaac was 8 days old, Abraham circumcised him as God commanded him. Abraham was 100 years old when his son Isaac was born to him. Sarah said, God has brought me laughter, and everyone who hears about this will laugh with me. And she added, who would have said to Abraham that Sarah would nurse children, yet I have borne him a son in his old age? And I'm amazed at God's miraculous work, and also by my very weak faith in this whole experience. I'm a praying parent because I'm a paranoid parent, which is probably not the right reason. But is anything too hard for the Lord? No. Amen.
I think we knew the conclusion before she started, though. Saw little Sobley walking up here. It turns out that Sobley's a pretty healthy little girl. So awesome. Let's close in prayer. Lord, strengthen our faith. I'm challenged today, realizing how often I am afraid and I doubt that you are able, or doubt that you're willing to take care of what I need and what I want. Lord, I pray if there's anyone in here that is struggling with their faith too, that they would find strength in you. They would find reassurance. Lord, help our faith. Thank you for the story of Sarah, and thank you for the story of our Sarah and Tristan. We pray in Jesus' name. Thank you.